Today, President Trump and I had in-depth exchanges on China-U.S. relations and international and regional dynamics. We both believe that the China-U.S. relationship is the most important bilateral relationship in the world. We must make it work and never mess it up. Both China and the United States stand to gain from cooperation and lose from confrontation. Our two countries should be partners rather than rivals.
Thank you again, President Xi, for this beautiful welcome. And tonight it is my honor to extend an invitation to you and Madam Peng to visit us at the White House this September 24th. And we look forward to it. And I'd now like to raise a glass and propose a toast to the rich and enduring ties between the American and Chinese people. It's a very special relationship, and I want to thank you again. This has been an amazing period of time.
This is my video update on this Thursday, midday, May the 14th, coming to you from Athens, Greece. Let's talk about some news. And before we get to the big news stories for today, remember to like this video, to subscribe to this channel if you are not already subscribed. And if you are watching from your mobile device, watching this video on YouTube, then you get 3 hypes a week. So allocating one of those hypes to this video would be very much appreciated. Let's talk about Trump meeting with Xi Jinping in Beijing, a meeting that lasted for 2 hours. What a beautiful bench, brand new bench here in Athens, Greece, pre-graffiti. Beautiful, clean. Give it a couple of months and we'll see all the graffiti on that bench, but it looks good. Good job, Athens. Beautiful bench here in Athens, Greece. Trump met with Xi Jinping for 2 hours. Then they changed venues. They moved to a different location and the meetings continued. The big delegation from the United States with business leaders, big time heavy hitters in the business world, Musk and Cook, NVIDIA, Boeing, BlackRock. BlackRock was there. Looking what it could buy up, checking out what it could buy up in China. And China's going to tell BlackRock, nope, can't buy up anything, not in China. But anyway, I'm sure BlackRock has assets and investments in China, no doubt about it. But anyway, they moved venues to the Temple of Heaven, according to Bloomberg. They met for 2 hours at the Great Hall of the People. And the Temple of Heaven is where Chinese emperors performed ceremonies there to claim divine legitimacy to rule. Trump was complimenting Xi Jinping big time compliments from U.S. President Trump, saying that the friendship between himself and the Chinese leader is strong, great friendship, never seen anything like it, that Xi Jinping is a great leader, and that Trump tells everybody what a great leader Xi Jinping is. So lots of compliments coming from U.S. President Trump, which is a good thing, and compliments from Xi Jinping talking about how both countries need to work together. China's door is always open to the United States and to U.S. businesses. Xi Jinping talked about diplomacy, cooperation, respect, trust, all of these things were the theme of Xi Jinping's statements. And we are getting reports that China did put down the red line when it came to Taiwan. Chinese President Xi has warned President Trump of a collision or even clashes if the Taiwan situation is mishandled. That was the warning, the one warning that we know of from Xi Jinping. Don't mess around with Taiwan. The U.S. is going to mess around with Taiwan. It's out of President Trump's control. There is going to be some messing around with Taiwan. Doesn't matter who the president is, whether it's Bidenopoulos or Trump or whoever else comes after Trump. Unfortunately, that is just the way things are set up. So everyone's talking about the handshake between Trump and Xi Jinping. Who won the handshake contest? Was it Xi? Was it Trump? I think it was even. That's what I think. It was even Steven, the handshake contest between the two. Some people are talking about the fact that analysts are saying the fact that Xi Jinping was not there to greet Trump at the airport is significant. I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. I'm curious to see who's going to greet Putin when he arrives in China. I believe he's going to be arriving in a couple of weeks. I think that will tell us the significance of who's there at the airport to greet the leader of a visiting country, of a big power. The reception was big for Trump, no doubt about it. The red carpet, top-level Chinese officials were there. It was a big reception for Trump. But Xi Jinping was not there. If he shows up to meet with Putin, to greet Putin at the airport, then that will say a lot. If he doesn't meet Putin at the airport, then that will also say a lot. That will tell us that it was not such a big deal for him not to be at the airport. Let's wait and see what happens with Putin's visit. But that's everything with China, what we know so far. Not many details as to what exactly was discussed during the two-hour meeting. Doesn't sound like a long time, 2 hours, does it? Not long at all. But they are going to be meeting, or they have been meeting for the rest of the day. But my sense is that the remainder of the meetings are very much focused on business and the CEOs that are accompanying the Trump White House. I think the rest of it is going to be pretty much a business meeting. Whatever foreign policy and diplomacy was to be discussed was addressed at this two-hour meeting. Not much can get done in 2 hours, but I guess it's enough time for each side to put down their position, to lay down their position and their red lines. With regards to Iran mostly, Taiwan as well. And there you have it. That's a two-hour meeting. Here's our thoughts on Iran. Here's what we're warning you about Iran. Here's what we're telling you about Iran. Here's what we're warning you about Taiwan. 2 hours is up. Let's change venues. Alexander brought up a good point in his video update yesterday. He noted that usually during these big superpower summits. In the past, you always had weeks and weeks, months of preparation where you would have diplomatic teams from both sides meeting one another, and they would be preparing everything for the big day, for the big summit event. You had none of that this time around, which leads me to believe that we're really not going to get too much done on the geopolitics, foreign policy side of things. We'll probably get a lot of movement on the business side of things with all the CEOs and the decision makers in Beijing. Let's talk about Lavrov in India. You know, there's a big BRICS meeting taking place in India. India has the BRICS presidency at the moment. And Lavrov, he is attending this meeting. He was He was, or he did give an interview to RT India. And boy, did Lavrov say some interesting things. Beautiful benches in Athens. Look at these beautiful, clean benches. Fantastic. I like it. I like it a lot. So, RT India, right? Or was it Sputnik India? I don't know. One of those networks conducted a very interesting interview of the Russian foreign minister. Lavrov, he talked a lot about the energy wars. He laid it all out there. What is the United States up to, according to the Russian foreign minister? What are they doing with all of these conflicts against Russia, proxy war against Russia, kidnapping of Maduro, war against Iran, blockade of Iran? What is the United States up to? Well, according to Lavrov, the United States, the collective West, what they want to achieve is full spectrum energy dominance, including dominating Russian energy, controlling the flow, the sales, the direction of sales of Russian energy, the United States and the collective West, and Israel. Israel, because you have the pipeline, Israel, Egypt, Cyprus, Greece, Europe, you have all of that going on as well. They want to control the energy flows. That is what's going on, according to Lavrov. And Lavrov brought up Nord Stream. And Lavrov claims that the United States wants to purchase the company that currently owns Nord Stream. It's a European company. Maybe once upon a time, I know that Russia also had a stake in this company. I imagine that Gazprom, I think it was Gazprom. Anyway, I imagine that Russia's stake in this company has been diluted or removed. But the United States wants to purchase this European company that has control of Nord Stream, that owns the Nord Stream pipeline. And they want to buy it, according to Lavrov, 10 times cheaper than its actual value. 10 times cheaper. And then they want to sell the gas to Europe at a significant markup. And that's the plan. That is what the United States is looking to do. Buy the company from Europe on the cheap. And then, according to Lavrov, the contracts for gas would not be between Germany and Russia. This is what Lavrov said in the interview. The contracts would be between Germany and the United States. And then the United States, which controls Nord Stream, they would purchase the gas from Russia, and then they would mark it up and and sell it to Germany, to the EU. We've been saying this for a while, actually. I think we talked about this. Oh, we talked about this maybe 2 years ago. I think we first brought it up about the plans of Nord Stream, the ultimate goal of what the U.S. has in mind for Nord Stream. And it looks like it's now moving forward, according to Lavrov. And of course the Europeans are going to sell the company to the United States. You think the Europeans are not going to sell the company to the United States, even if it is on the cheap? Of course they will. That's what good vassals do. And then they're going to buy the gas from the United States. It's Russian gas, but it's going to be U.S. Branded, right? Apple phones designed in California. Yep, Russian gas or gas to Germany, designed in the United States, purchased from Russia. but delivered by the United States. That's what they're going to say, delivered by the United States, right? So that was an interesting statement from the Russian foreign minister. Lavrov does not disappoint. He knows what's going on. He knows what's up. And if Lavrov knows what's up, then Putin knows what's up. And if Putin knows what's up, Xi Jinping knows what's up. They all know what's up. And Iran knows what's up. Full spectrum energy dominance. That's how you keep the unipolar world going. That's how you do it. By controlling all the energy. Rutte, the CEO of NATO, he is proposing to triple the amount of money that NATO member states hand over to Project Ukraine, to Le Goblin Ver. That's right. After all of these corruption scandals, after everything that we've had going on over the past couple of days, after the Yulia Mendel interview with Tucker Carlson, and whether you believe her or not, she claims all kinds of corruption and laundering is going on. But after all of this has come out over the past couple of days, what is the NATO CEO's response to all of this? We need to triple the amount of money that NATO members give to Ukraine. Not triple the amount of money that goes to NATO. That's a whole different story, the whole 5% and all of that stuff. That's separate. That's different. Rutte is talking about 0.25% of NATO members' GDP being locked in and allocated to Le Goblin Ver. 0.25%. Rutte reportedly raised the issue during a closed-door meeting of NATO ambassadors late last month. If adopted, the proposal, first floated by Ukrainian leader Le Goblin Ver last year, would effectively triple aid to Kiev to around $143 billion annually, $1 billion annually, according to NATO estimates of the Allies' combined GDP, cited by Politico. Another $143 billion annually locked into Project Ukraine, probably in perpetuity, forever and ever and ever. That's a good revenue stream for the NATO CEO. Very good revenue stream for Mark Rutte. Russia launched a big drone strike into Ukraine yesterday, drone and missile strike. You know, some reports have it at 800 drones. Other reports have it as high as 1,500 drones launched into Ukraine. We're talking all throughout Ukraine, from the west of Ukraine, center, the east, hitting military targets, energy facilities, you name it. Russia hit at transport hubs. And after the drone strike, Russia launched over 60 missiles into Ukraine, mostly Iskander missiles, but KH-101 missiles, Kinzhals as well. The missiles were mostly focused on the center and the east, but the drones were hitting everything. Russia has not launched this big of a strike in a long time. If it was really 1,500, which I doubt, but some reports claim 1,500, I think it is more along the 800 number. But either way, Russia has not launched this big of a strike in a long time. Ukraine is consistently launching drone strikes into Russia, 200, 300, 400 drones almost daily or every other day into Russia. So this is a big strike, a big message from the Russian military, and Ukraine air defense was a no-show, pathetically bad, pathetic in the performance. Ukraine's air defense, they even admit it this time around. They're not coming out with statements saying that Russia launched 800 drones and we knocked down 850 drones, or Russia launched 60 missiles and we intercepted 80 missiles. We're getting none of that this time around. We're actually getting reports saying that Ukraine's air defense intercepted under 30% of everything that was launched into Ukraine yesterday. The fact that they're admitting this is very telling. We've got the trial of Andrei Yermak, Zelensky's number two, who resigned or was fired for his alleged involvement in the Golden Toilets and the Midas Mindich scandal, that energy scandal from a few months ago. Mindich, he escaped to Israel, right? And Yermak, he said he was going to go to the front lines after he resigned, or after he was canned by the Green Goblin. He never went to the front lines. All the reports claim that he was still Zelensky's number two. He was still the man that was calling the shots in Ukraine, but he was doing it in an unofficial capacity. And now we have this latest scandal, which is peanuts. We're just talking about $10 million in money laundering. Absolute peanuts for these guys in Kiev, for someone like Yermak. But he is now in a trial. He is being accused of money laundering, $10 million in real estate stuff. And he is now going to be detained for 60 days. That is what the court ruled. The bail is set at $4 million. And Yermak, he made it out as if he doesn't have the $4 million to post bail. So he is going to hang out in a detention center. I imagine it's going to be a very nice, very cushy detention center. But nonetheless, he's going to hang out in a detention center for 2 months. And being a former lawyer, or being a lawyer, he said he's going to prepare his defense over the next 2 months. Of course, Yermak can easily post a $4 million bail. But that would look very suspicious, very bad, right? Because Yermak, his declared salary is $220,000 a year. That is what is on the books. And as assets, he has one car, a Mercedes, and a three-bedroom apartment in Kiev, and that is what he has declared. So for him to come out and reach in his pocket and just pull out a big fat wad of $4 million, which he probably could do, let's be honest, he could probably take $4 million right out of his pocket and say, here you go, I'm out on bail. If he did that, it would look really bad. So they have to go through all this theater of him being detained for 60 days and stuff like that. So that's the deal with Yermak. Money laundering from Andrei Yermak, that is the accusation. And for all of this to be happening, you know that some sort of green light was given to NABU, which is investigating all of this, Ukraine's investigative unit, which was set up by the West, actually, in 2015. That was set up by Obama. And I believe the UK, the US and the UK, or the US and the EU, they set up this whole NABU organization. So for them to do anything with regards to Yermak or even the Green Goblin going after the Zelensky regime, they must have had the order given to them by someone in Washington. Someone is sending a message to Le Goblin Ver, some part of the Washington deep state is unhappy with the Zelensky regime. Or maybe they're working with the Zelensky regime and realizing that you have all of this corruption being revealed about Zelensky. Maybe they're trying to help out Zelensky by really going after Yermak, or pretending to really go after Yermak. I read somewhere that he has 4 passports. Really? And then he's a flight risk. That's why the bail is so high. I don't know if he has 4 passports, but it wouldn't surprise me if he has 4 passports. So we can we can now discuss Netanyahu and the UAE. Let's shift gears. Netanyahu had a secret trip to the UAE. This is according to his office, to the Prime Minister's, to the Prime Minister of Israel's office. They even posted about this on X, Prime Minister's office statement. In the midst of Operation Roaring Lion, Prime Minister Netanyahu secretly visited the UAE, where he met with UAE President MBZ. MBZ. Not to be confused with MBS. We got MBS in Saudi Arabia. We got MBZ in the Emirates. And so as the war was going on, as the war was raging, according to his own office, they are now saying, and I wonder why they're putting this out there. Very weird why they're just throwing this out there at this time. They're saying, you know what? Netanyahu made a secret trip. Not so secret anymore. He made a trip to the UAE. And the reports are that during his trip, he sold the Iron Dome. And he sold all kinds of weapons to the UAE. Spiro Mercuri. We know that last name, right? Mercuri. Yeah. So he made this trip to the UAE. No one knew about it. Sold the Iron Dome. Sold all kinds of weapons to the UAE. And now they've decided to reveal all of this. Why? Under no pressure, no need to reveal any of this. They just come out with it. Very weird. And you know what makes it even stranger? The UAE is denying this. The UAE is saying, what are you talking about? There was no secret trip. There was no Netanyahu in the Emirates. The Emirati Foreign Ministry denied that Netanyahu had made an undeclared visit to the country. Relations with Israel are not based on secrecy or covert arrangements, the ministry added. So they're denying this secret meeting with Netanyahu. So look, one of two things is going on here, right? Either this meeting did happen, and Israel is throwing the UAE under the bus, or this meeting never happened, and Israel is throwing the UAE under the bus. It's one of the two things, right? So anyway, that's what's going on there. And I think now we can do a clown world. And boy, do we have a good clown world for today. A very good clown world. Focusing on the very athletic little Napoleon, President of France, Emmanuel Macron. And remember his trip to Vietnam, where we had the slap heard around the world, getting off the plane, about to get off the plane in Vietnam. And the cameras caught Brigitte slapping Macron or shoving Macron's face as they arrived in Vietnam. Macron said that they were just playing around. There was no fight going on. It was just goofing around, according to Macron. Anyway, some guy is writing a book on the Macrons. And he claims that what happened was that Brigitte saw some text messages from Macron to an Iranian actress. Very, very hot messages from Macron to an Iranian actress. And she got very upset with little Napoleon. And that's what really happened, according to this journalist who claims that he has his facts down on everything that is going on between Macron and Brigitte. He has been following the Macrons for many years. And he is sticking to his story, even though the Elysee, Macron's administration, is denying all of this. Let me read you what is happening here. That's the actress right there. Macron and this Iranian actress. I don't know if this is AI, this image, but Macron is chilling out, sipping his wine with this actress. Okay. That is Little Napoleon from the Daily Mail, the infamous Macron slap. Brigitte Macron's slap of Emmanuel was sparked when she saw a message from Iranian actress. Ah, Emmanuel, you dirty dog. Come on. Macron, really? Really, Macron hooking up with an Iranian actress? I don't buy it. I don't buy it for a second. So the Daily Mail says that French journalist, one second, let me not read this in the middle of the street. French journalist Florian Tardif has painted a rather different picture in his new book, A Nearly Perfect Couple, which promises to deliver an investigation into the forbidden zones of the husband and wife. Let me stop right there. The title of his book is A Nearly Perfect Couple? Really? Macron and Brigitte? Almost perfect. They're almost perfect. Not quite there, but almost. If it wasn't for these text messages, they would be the perfect couple, Emmanuel Macron and Brigitte Macron. Okay. That's the title of this guy's book, or the working title of his book. Speaking to RTL Radio on Wednesday, Tardif, a journalist at Paris Match, who has been following the Macron since 2017, called the notorious moment a classic couple's scene. What happened is that she, Brigitte, saw a message from a well-known figure, an Iranian actress, he said. Tardif claims that Macron maintained a platonic relationship with the acclaimed star for a few months, but sent her messages that went quite far, such as, I find you very pretty. That's what I've been told by those close to him, and that's what I'm saying this morning, Tardif said, insisting he has verified the story and that everything in his book is based on facts. So they land in Vietnam. Brigitte gets a peek at Macron's mobile device. She sees a message from Macron, allegedly, according to this journalist, a message from Macron to this actress where Macron says, I think you are very pretty. And then she slaps little Napoleon. All right. Anyway, what do you guys think? You believe any of this? Starting with Macron and an Iranian actress. A text message saying she's very pretty. That's the reason why Brigitte smacked him or shoved him. Do you guys believe this? Let me know in the comments down below. This is where I sign off for the day. TheDuran.locals.com. We are on, let's keep on walking up. Let's walk up the hill. We are on Rumble and Telegram and X. Go to the Duran shop, pick up some merch, 30% off all t-shirts on the Duran shop. Also look for us on Substack as well. All those links are in the description box down below. I will see everybody tomorrow. Take care.